is going on, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And of course, I'm not alone, man. Es mi amigo, Filio, Big Fizzy Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. We got surprised a little while ago with a flash thunderstorm. I had no idea. I was sitting here typing away, and all of a sudden the electricity went out. I'm like, what?
That was pretty wild.
So I thought maybe the city was doing some work or the maintenance, or a car ran into a transformer or something. Went and looked outside. It was pouring rain. I couldn't even hear it. I was like, wow, we have gotten an incredible amount of rain this summer. Not as much as like Arizona.
Yeah, that's true.
And other places. But yeah. I think that the reason it's affecting them so much is it's so uncommon. Compared to, you know, like we're
it's
set
been
up
a
for
wild,
it.
A wild last couple of years, man.
It's been wild all over for weather.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I'm here trying to finish up work. We're about to go on a family vacation. We're going down to Galveston for the rest of the week, staying at the beach house and looking forward to some fishing and things like that.
A bunch of y'all are going this time, right?
Yeah, a bunch of Delise family, her brother and sister and mother and her grandmother and some aunts and stuff. All on her side of the family are coming as well, so.
It'll be a big time.
I think so. I wish we were going for longer.
Yeah.
Just, you know, 4 days will go by like nothing.
But we're going to be pulling for no stingray attacks.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Right. That's
no stingray attacks.
So they went to Galveston twice last year. I only went once, and it was the trip that I didn't go is when Caleb got stung by the stingray.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, so. I talked to him. He said he's ready to go fishing again.
Speaking of tragedies, this is a little bit more tragic. We lost a good one today.
Yeah, I heard
that. Down here in Texas. One of Trace Amigos died in his sleep, Mr. Dusty Hill of ZZ Top.
Yeah, I know. I remember as a kid, you know, being our age when we grew up, MTV, getting to see the beginning of MTV. I remember them playing ZZ Top videos, like I'm saying.
All the time?
Once every 2 hours. All day, every day, 24/7. I mean, I just remember seeing the iconic spinning of the guitar and stuff like they really.
The fuzzy guitar.
It was iconic for me.
Well, and I remember like that's where you saw the girls with like the high heels and the stockings. Remember
right,
all that?
Yeah.
Like they always
give
had
me all your love in and all that legs and stuff. Yeah.
All of that. And that again, like I've said, though, as a kid, I didn't realize that they were that big outside of the state of Texas.
Cause I didn't either.
Didn't know.
You know, one thing I didn't also learn, I learned watching a ZZ Top documentary like a year ago. I don't know. I might have talked about this. There was a animal handler that they had hired to come on the stage because they were the little band from Texas and they had like a longhorn and stuff. One of the animals they had was a buzzard. This buzzard's like 54 years old now. I had no idea they lived that long. Do you? Did you?
No, I remember talking about this because you had called
me. On air
me.
We did?
I believe so. Oh. Yeah. I believe we discussed this, but I remember you telling me you got to watch this documentary distinctively because you were like, you need to watch the part about the buzzard.
Yeah, that was the most exciting thing about the whole thing because I'm like, buzzards live that long?
Would you have one as a pet if you could?
A buzzard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be crazy?
They are pretty cool.
Like they come over to your house and this buzzard's just like perched up on something.
You know, it's highly illegal to shoot them.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. They are pretty cool.
They are really, well, like I think that's what would cure every disease. If you could catch a buzzard and draw its blood and inject yourself, that might cure every disease.
Well, you definitely could consume and eat anything because those things eat rotting, nasty.
This is true.
Carrion off the road and it doesn't affect their stomach at all. So anyways, sad news, but you know, they had a really good career for a very long time.
Yeah.
What's going on in your world, man?
Not much. I got to babysit my granddaughter, just her and I. We got to hang out most of the day, and so I had fun doing all that and just staying busy, like I said, monkeying around here doing stuff.
Awesome.
That's
awesome. It. Well, let's get into the news.
Dude, I've got something here for you. Now, our buddy Lon made an appearance on Coast to Coast, right, over there at Phantoms and Monsters, and he got to share some things about not deer. I've gotten a ton of messages about people after doing that about the not deer that I didn't realize it was such a thing that it's – I've gotten messages, like I said, on Instagram, but I didn't realize it was as prominent as it was, but maybe even like a subtopic. Like there's degrees of what people talk about. Like we always talk about Bigfoot and then dog man, you know, and there's certain things, but the not deer thing didn't seem to be a huge deal outside of like we've discussed with Appalachia and things like that. Lon talks about this and he received these and he's posted them up, folks. Listen to this. says, I heard you tonight on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, and Not Deer was mentioned, and it brought a memory that will never leave my mind. Last year, about late August, September, I was biking home from work. I had worked second shift from noon to midnight, and I live about 5 miles from where I work. And now I've had my driver's license suspended for a couple months, so I have to bike back and forth from work. Well, one night, while rounding a corner, I saw three pair of glowing eyes. They were glowing because the reflection of my headlight on my bike. They looked like deer, but their necks were awkward and long, and the angle they were standing at appeared that their necks went straight down into their legs, and they almost looked like bipedal creatures, just staring at me. They didn't run away or seem to even fear me. Now, I had an uneasy feeling the entire ride home. Now, they had the head of a deer, but were directly facing me the whole time, staring as I passed. And I'll never forget how strange that was or how strange they looked. Now, I'm 34 years old, and I've been around deer my whole life. I'm a woodsman and a hunter and an outdoor enthusiast. I've never experienced behavior like that or seen a deer with that long of neck in my life. This was in between the towns of Maple Plain and Loretto, Minnesota. I've never heard of Not Deer until tonight, and I had no idea that there had been other sightings of strange deer until your appearance tonight on Coast to Coast. I know what I saw was not normal, and I thought this whole time I was crazy. And have there been any other reports in this area that you know of? Thanks for all your time, and I appreciate everything you do. CL.
Wow.
So again, people are seeing this, and they always go to the neck. They're like, the neck looks long. I saw a video someone had sent me to where somebody's talking about a not deer, and it almost looks like a cross between like a white-tailed doe and an alpaca.
Really?
Yeah, or like a llama, how long their neck is. Now, listen to this. Another one come in. It says, last night, which was January of 2020, says, a friend of mine, my boyfriend, and I were on our way back into town from a little day trip. We were on the highway at around midnight, and we just see a creature that looked like it was a deer, but also looked as if it were human, like a human with some deer features. It wasn't one of us hallucinating, because when my boyfriend asked what it was that he had just seen, my friend said, oh, well, that was a not deer. We didn't see it up close, nor did we stop to find it. Now, my boyfriend sped up to make sure the not deer couldn't catch up to us, but because something about those unnerve him to the core, a not deer can't catch us going 80, right? This was in North Central Kentucky. Well, this one comes from Georgia, and it says, I'm a Northwest Georgianite living at the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, halfway in between Chattanooga and Atlanta. Sometimes my family takes trips to the mountains. And one day up there, my cousin and I wanted to go cruising around to just take in the views. It was getting late, around 8 p.m., so we started to head back. Well, close back to our cabin, we see a deer on the side of the road, so we slow down. Then as we get close, it walks in the road pretty close to being dead in front of us. I hit the brakes, and then it stands up and starts walking around on its back legs. We were freaking out because it's so crazy. We've been out in nature with animals our whole lives. I grew up being a minute away from Pine Mountain, living out on the lake, but I've never seen anything like this. It just looked so wrong. Its joints didn't move right, and it had arms, not front legs, and the upper half was like a human, excluding the head. Now, we gassed it around those mountain curves and just kept going. We didn't even want to stop at the cabin because we didn't want to stop moving. JB. Imagine seeing that, knowing what you know, imagine seeing that a deer walks out that already looks awkward and then just stands up on its back legs and looks more human.
I've seen deer stand on their back legs and like paw at each other before.
Yeah, when they fight, does fight. Yeah.
So they definitely can stand on their back legs. But what would make one do it for no reason, not fighting anything?
And just start walking around like that, yeah. But also talking like it almost had arms instead of legs.
Well, that is one common description, is people believe it's like a shape-shifting skinwalker.
Yes.
You know, a deer man. I've even heard them.
Yes.
Called.
Yes.
Pretty cool. Check this out. It says about 20 years or so ago, I was driving down a pass in Oregon. It is just outside my town in the foothills and has farms all around. Most of the night traffic is delivery trucks avoiding tolls. There's a little field off the road, I discovered, and since it's outside of town, it's perfect for stargazing. And the grass in the summer covers you. I'd bring friends up there to look at the stars and talk about deep subjects. When this incident took place, I was bringing a new friend to my field. He was the ultimate skeptic, didn't believe in anything unless it could be demonstrated scientifically. End of story. Now, I'm a bit more flexible, so discussions with him were quite engaging and enjoyable. It was late at night, and the road was curvy. Just before reaching my field, we came around a bend, and something darted in front of my car. It was about the size of a chimpanzee, and it was running using its front arms just like a chimpanzee would. When it ran in front of my car, it reared up, and I saw a grimacing mouth full of sharp teeth. Now, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that this was a chimp. I live near a primate testing facility, and there have been two escapes in my lifetime. But what was just wrong, was truly broke me, was that this creature was wearing a backpack and a hat. A red hat. A pointy red hat. My mind froze on that hat and short-circuited. It dove into the bushes on the other side of the road, heading in the direction of a house. I slammed my brakes on and put the car in reverse. Before I could back up, my stoic, scientific, calm friend screamed at me, "What are you doing?" To which I replied, "I'm going after it." He locked his door and leaned over and locked mine and told me to drive, just drive. Still considering him, I asked what he thought he had just seen. He said, "I don't know. It looked like a gnome or a troll or something. Just go." I was satisfied enough that my friend had seen something that shocked him to his core, enough to shake his beliefs, and we drove on. We never spoke about it again. I thought about it at the time as like a kobold, as it resembles the description of kobolds in the Magic Kingdom books, but it wasn't a kobold. It wasn't until many, many years later that I came across the description of a Southeast Asian mythological creature. I forgot the name of it, so if anyone has the knowledge out there, I would appreciate it, which matched it exactly. The funny thing is, we have a heavy Asian population in that area, so it oddly makes sense. I haven't seen anything like this since, though I look every time I drive by that spot. J.H. So the thing was wearing a red pointy hat, had a backpack on.
Dude, that's a gnome.
Size of a chimpanzee.
That's a gnome, man.
How creepy is that?
Extremely.
I don't know. I like the stories and the sightings of these fae folk.
Well, the whole thing, like we always talk about, is if it is fake, right? If it is a joke, who would be doing it? Who would be going out of their way to go, "You know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to get dressed up to look like a gnome." And hopefully somebody sees it. And then hopefully that person writes a story about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, how would you make yourself look like a small humanoid?
Yeah, exactly. So the only thing is that was real.
Right, that is creepy. Speaking of creepy, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to talk about some strange legends, stories, and folklore in and around the state of Kentucky. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All too often, authentic folklore has been caught up in the backwash of time. Nearly forgotten, these tales are buried away in old books and journals and are all but lost in the retelling of legends. As time moves on and on and on, more of these stories are lost every day. Thanks to podcasts like Expanded Perspectives, we are able to keep these stories and legends alive by retelling them to you. Every time I hear a new one,
I can't help but to think of all of the tales that have already been lost to time. Human beings are no doubt social creatures. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And as much as the many cool gadgets and gizmos we all have, nothing replaces sitting down and listening to a good story. And it's these stories, the ones sent into the show by you listeners, or something that is shared on the internet, that keeps me going. I can't help it. I'm constantly wanting to hear the next creepy story, the next unexplained sighting, the next terrifying encounter. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some of the strange legends from the state of Kentucky. Now, you might be asking yourself, Kentucky? Why Kentucky? And I say, why not? I've never been there, but there appears to be a lot going on in the bluegrass state. So let's get started. Now, if I were to ask you about some of the legends of Kentucky, you would probably tell me about the Goat Man, or the legend of the Pope Lick Monster, or perhaps the double death of Octavia Smith Hatcher, the Witch's Tree of Old Louisville, or my personal favorite, the Hopkinsville Goblins. And you wouldn't be wrong, those are fantastic stories indeed. But I'm going to get into some stories you may not be as familiar with. Let's begin. During the timber cutting days of 1885 to 1910, a sawmill, where dozens of men were employed, sat beside a certain old gravel road in Estill County. The hands' entertainment at day's end was playing cards, pitching horseshoes, and telling lies. One night, just after payday, a poker game was in progress. Moonshine was flowing freely, and what started as a friendly argument turned soon into a fight. During the yelling, swearing, and scuffling, one of the men grabbed a large knife and started swinging it wildly. The melee came to a sudden halt when the knife wielder's frenzied slashing beheaded one of the men. The others said that the headless man ran down the road from the bunkhouse for about 100 feet before he fell. Several years after the incident, a farmer was driving a wagon along the same road when all of a sudden, a man without a head jumped out in front of his team. The terrified animals ran away with the wagon. Luckily, the farmer jumped to safety. Thereafter, the apparition was seen almost nightly by those using that road. On one occasion, a group of young people, returning home from a dance, were amazed to see a headless body, blood streaming from a horrible stump of a neck, standing before them. Scared witless, the group scattered in all directions. The apparition began to chase three girls, who ran down the road. One of the young women fell and broke her arm. She said later that the apparition passed directly over her, but she felt only what seemed to be a slight breeze. Later that night, the group gathered at one of their homes. After calming the young people, several fathers, armed with shotguns and carrying lanterns, walked the entire stretch of the road, but neither saw nor heard anything unusual. The latest known sighting of this apparition was in August of 1978. A man named John Rose, a farmer who lived in the vicinity of this old and little-used road, had gone to the grocery store about 3 miles from his farm. Upon returning home, his car, he said, just stopped, although it had recently been serviced and should have been in perfect driving condition. When Rose got out to see if he could get it started again, he saw what he first thought to be a white cow standing beside the road. The animal, or whatever it was making a long, gasping sound, like a person smothering. Then,
it slowly moved towards him. The only weapon Rose carried at the time was a pocket knife. Backing up a few steps, he managed to get the knife out and to open it. The moon was bright, and when the apparition started to follow him with outstretched arms, Rose realized that he had come face to face with the ghost of the headless logger. Now, Rose is made of stern stuff and does not scare easily. He is a quiet, sober farmer, not given to foolishness or superstition. He said that he made up his mind in just 1 second that he would be damned if a ghost or anything else was going to scare him into running to the neighbor's house for any help. Rose swears that when the apparition grabbed him around the waist, he could actually feel a body against his. He said he stabbed it several times in the chest. All the while, he could hear long, gasping sounds coming from whatever he was fighting. After a few minutes, the apparition released him and ran into the woods. After the attack, Rose walked a half mile to a neighbor's home. The neighbor later described Rose's condition. He said, "Man, it looked like he had been stuck like a hog. Blood was all over him, and his left arm was cut in several places." Rose was taken to a hospital where his wounds were treated. Some cuts were so severe that stitches were required. Wow, what an incredible story. So he had a run-in with this headless apparition of the beheaded logger, and he got into a fight with the thing. He didn't just see it. He actually fought with it, and it, I don't know what cut him, but something cut him up. What a crazy story. Check this one out. In South Central Kentucky, there is an isolated stream where disembodied voices apparently can be heard. Now, these bodiless voices have been heard by dozens of people throughout the past 140 years at different times of the day and night, and have even been captured on a tape recorder. The earliest known record of the ghostly voices was in 1840 when a farmer named Joseph Caudill went squirrel hunting along the stream. He returned home and told his family that he heard strange voices, but that he could see no one. Several members of his family went to the location where they also heard the same disembodied voices. The voices seemed to be all around them, but in no one particular spot, and they never saw anybody. The Caudills told others, and the story spread like wildfire. Since then, the voices have been heard hundreds of times by many, many different people. The voices seem to be those of several people all talking at once. Some people say that the voices are trying to tell of some terrible event. Hysterical female voices have been reported, mixed with those of shouting males, seemingly begging for help. At other times, the sounds are soft, as if one is outside a room listening to a group of people talking normally. All reports say that the voices can be heard, but individual words cannot be distinguished. Sometimes, they last for an hour, while at other times, only for a few minutes. The voices are a reality. Many people have gone out and recorded the sounds on tape. By searching county records, people have found the origin of this strange phenomenon, but the reason for it still remains a mystery. There is a deed to the property dated June 2nd, 1827, and it conveys title to a guy named Jacob Brent. Now, he built a 7-room log cabin on it, where the 11 Brents, all considered by neighbors to be somewhat strange, he said that they never visited anyone and discouraged anyone from visiting them. They never went to church or attended any social functions. None of the children ever married, and only seldom did any of them leave the cabin. On several occasions, hunters reported hearing weird screams and shouts coming from the direction of the cabin. There was also a sickening, sweet smell in the area that was reported. The Brents' arrival closely paralleled the beginning of strange occurrences in the neighborhood. On one occasion, an unusual animal was killed a few miles from Brent's cabin. the hunters who shot this creature, first thought it was a human. It stood 8 feet tall with extremely long arms and was covered with hair, except for the face. The same sweet, sickening odor that surrounded the Brent cabin permeated the air around this animal. When the hunters examined the dead creature, they found it to be female. A long gold chain with a locket around its neck. And William Rose, a member of the hunting party, swore that the locket belonged to his daughter, who had disappeared only a few weeks before. The hunters backtracked the creature straight to the Brent cabin, and the Brents denied any knowledge of it. At another time, several people saw a large bird with a wingspan, get this, estimated at 20 feet. People who saw it flying low swore that it had a human face. And each time it was seen, it was either coming from or going to the Brent cabin. Cliff Johnson, a well-known hunter and farmer of the area, lived about 5 miles from the Brents. He told of stopping at the Brent cabin once to get a drink of water and visit with them for a while, you know, while he was on his hunting trip. The family, he said, was unfriendly and discouraged from him staying. Johnson swore that he saw a child with two heads playing beside the cabin with a two-legged dog that walked upright. The child and dog were quickly taken out of sight by a member of the family, who realized Johnson had seen them. Johnson left after only a few minutes, and as he went down the creek, he could hear weird screams and shouts mixed with a dog's terrifying howl coming from the cabin. He said he never went back there. There were not only strange animals seen in the area. One farmer shot a hog that had 8 legs. Another reported seeing a goat-like creature with an upper body like that of a man. The creature reportedly attacked the farmer's cattle with a knife. The farmer said he shot it, but the thing got away. A cow that weighed an estimated 3 tons was seen crashing through the woods, running as if in great terror. One hysterical housewife told neighbors about seeing children, 12 inches tall, playing in a stream near her home. Now, other reports seeing huge snakes of species unknown to the area. Most alarming were the dozen or so local children who disappeared over a 3-year period. The few times that the Brents were questioned about the strange creatures and occurrences, they either denied them with no comment or contended that the persons who claimed to have seen that were only imagining things. On April 10th, 1837, several families saw what appeared to be a large ball of light in the nighttime sky. The light made several circles around a radius of about 10 miles, then went in the direction of the Brent cabin and disappeared. Because so many strange things have occurred in the neighborhood, the phenomenon aroused little curiosity. A few days after the light was seen, a farmer named John Taylor and his 3 sons went to the Brents for the purpose of buying some cattle. As the 4 men rounded a curve below the cabin, they were amazed to see where the cabin had stood, there remained nothing but the stone foundations. Upon close examination, they could tell that the dwelling had not burned, but it had been lifted straight up off of the ground. Limbs broken from trees that grew against the cabin prove this. Brent's wagon, carriage, tools, and other farm implements were still in the barns. This was apparent proof that they had not simply moved to another area. The entire Brent family was gone without a trace, including all of their cattle, horses, dogs, and cats. Local authorities made an intensive search, but no further trace of the Brents was ever found. The report on the Brent family's strange disappearance is still on record at the local sheriff's office. Gradually, the mystery faded from the memory of local residents. The Brent farm fell into disuse, and for the most part, folks avoided going near the place. There were no reports of any strange sounds or unusual animals for about 3 years after the Brents disappeared. It was in 1840 when Joseph Caudill first heard the ghostly voices. The strange disappearance of the Brents and the eventual possession of the site by the Phantom Voices raise many questions, but provide no answers. Could the voices be members of the Brent family, trying to make contact with someone? Are the voices attempting to explain what happened to the Brents, their animals, and their cabin? Was the family involved in some form of witchcraft? Did some unknown power spirit them from Earth, where they are lost in a time warp they cannot escape? Are the voices seeking help in an effort to return? Yes, there are many questions, but no answers. At least not yet. Only the unintelligible babble of ghostly voices to be heard by an occasional visitor to the site of the old Brent cabin. Wow. What a story. I mean, there's so many things, from the mutant children to the mutant pets and animals and dogmen or upright walking dogs to giant birds to UFOs, glowing orbs, something lifting the cabin without a trace off of its foundation. I mean, what a strange story. It's one of the ones that's so strange. You're like, how have I never heard of this? That's what I thought. Moving on. The Battle of Wildcat Mountain would be the first test under fire for the Confederates' newly organized 1st Kentucky Cavalry. The young, untried soldiers making up the unit knew very little of war. They had heard stories about the Mexican War from their fathers, uncles, and grandfathers, but time had laundered those experiences to the point that these young recruits looked on them as high adventure to be eagerly anticipated. As they jauntily walked along the valley road leading to Wildcat Mountain and their rendezvous with the war, the young men joked about the predicament which forced them to march into battle. Surely, they would get horses following the coming engagement. Then there would be no more tiresome marching for this cavalry unit. Jamie Coleman was among those young men of the 1st Kentucky Cavalry. He had lied about his age in order to be accepted. He was just a boy, and had slipped away from home in order to volunteer. After just a few short weeks of training, Jamie and the other young cavalrymen of the 1st Kentucky were about to learn firsthand that war is anything but an experience to eagerly anticipate. For most of them, it would be the last thing they would ever learn. The 1st Kentucky began its attack in the afternoon of October 21st, 1861. Quickly, the young troopers learned that bullets respect no one. As comrades fell around them, the inexperienced soldiers began to realize that they were involved in something totally different than they had envisioned when they volunteered. Now they knew that war was less a matter of glory than a matter of survival. That war is a muster of inescapable fear and death. For whatever reason, during the battle, Jamie Coleman found himself separated from his companions. He said, "Lord, I didn't know war could be like this." The thoughts raced through his frightened mind. All the screams, the blood, and the stink is enough to make you sick. Boys I've knowed all my life dropping around me like flies. I sure wish I was home. It seems like 1,000 years ago when I left. Hope I will live to see Ma and Pa and the rest of the family again. Suddenly, the whole world seemed to explode around him. Jamie found himself directly in the path of a terrible grape shot from the cannon mounted at the top of the Wildcat Mountain. 1,000,000 lights flared. There was one terrible instant of pain, and then Jamie knew nothing more. Jamie had written his parents twice after he enlisted. The first letter was filled with enthusiasm. It told of his experiences during training and the friends that he had made. Fighting was still a game in his inexperienced mind, and Jamie was convinced that the Confederates would win the war in only a few days. He also promised to visit home as soon as he could, and Jamie's father was secretly proud of him, and although he didn't mean it, he said, "I'll wear that young gun out with a switch when he gets home." Jamie's second letter showed much more maturity. expressing more sober thoughts. He had begun to realize that the war might not be a picnic after all. Again, he promised to visit when he could. On October 25, 1861, Jamie's mother was working in the yard among her flowers when she saw Jamie coming up the walkway. He appeared older, and there was a faraway look in his eyes, as if he had seen things his mind could not accept. Calling his father and other members of the family, Jamie's mother hugged him as they walked into the house. The family excitedly greeted Jamie, as any family would greet a returning soldier. The family promptly forgot about the whipping, and the father had promptly forgot about the whipping he was going to give his son, of course. That evening, neighbors gathered at the Coleman home to ask questions and discuss the Battle of Wildcat Mountain with Jamie. Jamie seemed withdrawn and reluctant to talk during the entire evening. Family and friends attributed this strange behavior to his experience during battle and the fact that this was his first visit home. They felt the two events had combined to put him in a mild state of shock. Time would cure that. He was a veteran of one battle now. For the next 3 days, Jamie helped his mother with chores around the house and visited friends in the neighborhood. But as they all noticed, he had the haunted look of one who's seen too much of death and suffering, not fully understanding, though. On the fourth day, Jamie told his family, "I have to get back now. My friends over on the mountain need me." It was approaching dusk when Jamie departed. As he took leave of his mother, he seemed hardly aware of her presence, his thoughts apparently in another place. Miss Coleman saw him go through the gate, then he seemed to float just above the ground in the direction of Wildcat Mountain. Later, she told friends that she thought it was her eyes or the gathering darkness that gave the impression that Jamie was drifting above the path. It wasn't until the family learned of Jamie's death that his mother realized that the son, who had visited them, was of another world. Casualties of Wildcat Mountain were officially released to the next of kin on October 30th, 1861. Jamie Coleman was one of the first to die, hit by a shell during the initial charge on October 21st. Ooh, creepy, right? The ghost of her dead son comes home and visits. No, it's strange, though, hanging out with the family and neighbors and stuff. That's just, it's hard to wrap your mind around, but that's a cool one. I like it. Moving on. A young farm couple were the first people to become aware that a large covered bridge in northeastern Kentucky was something more than ordinary. The year was 1890, and the month was July. The young wife said that she first noticed the silence at a time of the year when creek frogs, insects, whippoorwills normally fill the air with sound. As the couple approached the halfway point across the bridge, they saw a light rise up from nowhere at the far end. At the same time, they could hear the voices of crying children. Thinking someone was hurt, the couple hurried their horse-drawn wagon toward the light and the sounds. Reaching the end of the bridge, they stopped their wagon, but they couldn't see anyone. The strange light was still there, and it started bobbing up and down. 7 times it bobbed, and then it disappeared. After a few minutes, the light reappeared. It once again bobbed 7 times, and again it vanished. This sequence continued for nearly 1 hour. Each time the bobbing light was accompanied by the sound of crying children. The young people were mystified as they were unable to locate the source for either the light or the sounds. Finally, they gave up and drove on home. They did not tell of their strange experience until several years later. One night in 1895, Morgan Rogers and his 3 sons were fishing near the covered bridge when they heard the sound of an object being dropped into the water. They heard it 7 times. Then it stopped for a few minutes, only to start again and repeat itself. At the same time, they saw a round ball of light bob up and down, you guessed it, 7 times at the end of the bridge. They did not hear the crying children as the others had done, but they did see all the strange sights. The mysterious lights on the bridge caused a tragedy in 1900. Frank Hardin, his wife and young baby, were crossing the bridge in a wagon when the light bobbed up in front of their team. The horses, terrified, bolted so quickly that Frank couldn't control them. As they careened off the bridge, the wagon struck a rock and overturned, killing Hardin's wife and baby. Hardin left the county after the accident. For the next 20 years, the bobbing light and the strange sounds were seen and heard frequently, and the structure became known as the Haunted Bridge. The county built a new road which bypassed the bridge, and the old road was abandoned. In 1925, during a severe summer electrical storm, hikers sought shelter underneath that abandoned bridge. The hikers thought they were safe, but lightning struck the bridge, killing two of them instantly and setting the bridge on fire. Braving the fire, the remaining hikers dragged out the two bodies, then went to the county seat and reported the incident to the sheriff's office. Half of the bridge was destroyed by the fire, and county authorities decided to finish the demolition. Wreckers, reaching the end of the bridge where the mysterious lights had been seen and crying had been heard, found that one of the four wooden beams supporting the sides and roof of the bridge was hollow. When they looked inside, they found the skeletons of seven small children. Each child had a small round hole in its skull, proof that each had been killed. An investigation was conducted by the sheriff's department, and old records revealed that there had been a migrant camp for farm and sawmill workers located on the river a short distance from the covered bridge from 1840 to 1885. It was suspected, but never proven, that an interrant worker had killed the children and hidden the bodies in the hollow bridge timbers. Records also revealed that during the same period, over 25 small children had disappeared throughout the county. The authorities never investigated or tied the disappearances together, since they were widely separated in an area that had been covered a period of 45 years. The identities of the children were never known, since the remains could not be identified. Later, however, they were given Christian burials in the local cemetery. Who killed the children and put their bodies in the hollow beam remains a mystery. After the skeletons were found and the bridge was destroyed, the bobbing lights and crying children were never seen or heard again. Wow. Interesting. Cold, terrible. Whoever this murderer of children was, terrible story, but interesting nonetheless. Now, this next one, if you've been listening to Expanded Perspectives for a long time, you might recognize this one. This is a crowd favorite. I have told it once before, but it was probably, 9 years ago. And over the years, we've gotten several emails about this one story. And so, before we get out of here, I'm going to retell it again one more time. It's the Vanishing Bird story, or the Vanishing Bird family story. Check this out. In the year 1900, a family, considered to be very strange by their few isolated neighbors, lived on a high point above the North Fork of the Kentucky River. There were 9 members in this family, and they lived in a large log house built in an unusual oblong fashion. They made no friends and allowed no one except the family to enter their home. On occasion, people passing along the road in front of this dwelling could hear screams and a flapping sound, such as a large winged bird might make. There were also sounds of high-pitched voices and the sound of blows, such as might be made if a person were being beaten. At night, passers-by in Williams Creek might hear a splash as if a large object were being dropped into the water. The sound was always heard near this house. No one ever saw any lights at night, and no smoke was ever seen coming from the chimney. Eventually, the sounds from this house became the talk of a few families living upstream. Years had passed, and a graveyard appeared on the hill behind the house. Although no neighbors had ever heard of a death or burial in the family, several years after it was first noticed, the graveyard had grown to contain over 50 small tombstones made of plain creek rocks. Strangely, it appeared there were still 9 members in the family. They were seen separately at various times in the local village some 2 miles away, where they purchased only bare necessities, but they always bought some type of grain. Not only did they appear to be the same individuals, but they seemed never to grow any older. They were physically small, and the few people who ever did see them up close swore their faces resembled those of birds, with long noses and receding chins. They all walked with a quick, jerky kind of step, spoke in high-pitched voices, and always wore gloves and long coats. After about 10 years, curiosity got the best of a group of men, and they made plans to check on the actions of this strange family. They wanted some explanations. How did they live? They did very little farming and owned no farm animals. Why did they never seem to age? Why did a cemetery continue to grow when there were no known deaths in the family? Before going to talk to the odd family, though, the men checked on travelers who were known to have used the road. They found no reports of any missing persons, violence, or death. On a clear, moonlit night, about 50 men assembled to visit the unusual family. They formed 2 groups so they could approach the house from different directions. One group reached the front yard as the other came into the backyard, and all were amazed to see 9 large birds fly away from the rooftop of the house. They entered the large dwelling to find nothing but piles of straw resembling huge birds' nests. No furniture, clothes, tools, or other human necessities were found. The next morning, the men investigated the graveyard. They opened some 20 of the graves and found small human skeletons. The skeletons revealed an amazing trait never before seen by any of those present. Each had 2 large extra bones along the shoulder. This seemed to indicate that while the bodies appeared human, they had somehow developed the ability to fly. The bones were hollow, like those of birds, and some of the first bodies to be buried had completely disintegrated. Before leaving, the men burned the house, and the area was avoided after that. What kind of creatures were these? Where had they come from? Where did they go? The number of graves would indicate an impossible birth rate for a normal human family. Might the sounds of objects being dropped into the large creek have been eggs that would not hatch? A bird will throw these out of the nest, especially without a shell. All traces of the house's foundation, the cemetery, and the bridge are gone now, and only slight indentations above the river show where the old road used to be. Today, on the high point of land where the dwelling stood, some unusual black birds are occasionally seen. They are exceptionally large and seem reluctant to fly away. They watch and follow people who come near. At times, it seems they are trying to speak. Wow, what a crazy story. I can see why so many people enjoy it. I enjoy it. I know this is a legend and folklore of the state of Kentucky, but man, that story is so cool. I hope it's real. I hope you like those strange tales of legend and lore. I don't know if they're real or not, but I sure hope they are. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We'll be right back.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Hope you guys like those stories. Man, there's a ton of eerie stories that come from that part of the world. Like I mentioned, along with Pennsylvania, Ohio, for whatever reason, those couple states in that area of the Appalachia Mountains seems to be a hot spot for paranormal sightings. I mean, I'm talking about all types of things. I think a lot of the ghost sightings and stuff are because of the Revolutionary War battles that took place, the Civil War battles. So there's been a lot of death and terrible things that have happened in that part of the world. So it makes sense that there's a lot of ghost sightings. But there's also lots of UFOs, Bigfoot, fey folk. I mean, just you, any type of paranormal encounter you can think of, it's probably happened in the state of Kentucky, Pennsylvania, or Ohio.
Shout out to the late, great Kentucky Huffman.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, dude, what is it?
Right? Don't you think that we get
Pennsylvania is like steeped in weirdness.
Like everything is seen there.
Right?
Well, you know, there's other states like Washington, of course, Oregon area. You get a lot of Bigfoot sightings, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Florida, you get a lot of sightings of like bizarre water cryptids or
skunk ape,
giant anacondas, hyenas and stuff. That makes sense. But then there's other states like, you know, like Delaware. I'm just trying to think of ones that you hardly ever hear anything happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vermont. I don't really get a lot of stories from Vermont. Nebraska, you don't. I'm out there listening. There's paranormal sightings in every country in the world,
some
all
are
over.
Just more. There's some spots.
But I would definitely say, for whatever reason, that part of the United States has a lot of sightings.
Ohio is always stacked thick with them, too.
Man. Yeah. I don't know why.
And it's a beautiful state.
I've never been to Kentucky. But I can only imagine. I've been in and around there. Like, I've been to Tennessee.
It's beautiful areas.
Pennsylvania. I've had family living in Pennsylvania. I've been to Indiana, Illinois. I've been to Illinois.
This is going to go great on his bragging montage I'm putting together.
But I've never been to Kentucky. I would like to go, though. I think it would be cool.
Yeah.
The country's beautiful, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's got a lot of stereotypical stories about hillbillies and ginseng hunters and stuff like that. Well, moonshiners.
Anything that you look where there's a lot of mountainous range like that, where there's not a lot of people get in and about and it's big areas, there's always like room for the folklore. And it always makes you wonder, was it shared to keep people off of other people's property?
Sure.
Because like, you know what I mean? What's better if you're going to be having a still, right? What's better than everybody to think that that's like Dead Man Hollow?
And right. Those forests are haunted. Right. Always, so you stay out of there.
Always. Yeah. But then some of it seems to hold a lot of water when you start looking at it. Like, there's more and more people start being like, no, something really went on down there.
And you know what's crazy is, like, we talk about on this show all the time how, like, we think in ancient civilizations long time ago that there might have been some really advanced cultures. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about Atlantis or other parts. And then there were also indigenous tribes who, just like today, there's major cities like Sydney, New York, L.A., Tokyo. But there's also indigenous people living in the wilds, that they're living life exactly the same. What I'm bringing all that up for is, it seems like there's parts of our country where it's like, I'm sorry, hit the remote. Like when you go out in West Texas, it's like going back in time.
Yes.
When you get out in rural Kentucky and those areas, it's like going back in time. The reason I say that, because I said I haven't been there, but there's this documentary, not a documentary, that's the wrong word. There's this documentarian who has a YouTube channel called like Soft White Underbelly.
Yeah.
And he interviews a lot of these people in West Virginia, Kentucky, all these back people that live out in the rural areas. And it's like they're living still in 1970.
Yes.
Like a whole lot hasn't seemed to change for them. Going back three or four generations. Like, they'll be living the same way they were their grand-grand-grandpappy was, yet they got an iPhone in their hand.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think that there's still parts of the world.
Well, Harlan, Kentucky, is like still that. One of the most poorest counties, Harlan County, in Kentucky, because it was one of the coal mine counties in Kentucky. There's a lot of stories about just how, like that, it hasn't changed over all that time.
Yeah, I mean, but then there's a lot of good things that come out of places like that. Like Chris Knight, he's an amazing songwriter. Mm-hmm. He's from like Slaughter's, Kentucky, I think. And then you have like the Kentucky Derby, which is really posh and people fly in from all over the world.
Bougie.
All over the world to attend that. So it's weird that there's pockets of how it can coexist at the same time, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyways, like I said before the beginning of the show or the beginning of the segment, I'm going to be going out of town the rest of the week. Hopefully nobody gets attacked by any stingrays or sharks. There's been a Jaws marathon playing all week, I know, because last night me and Luke watched like part 3 or part 4. I don't remember the exact. I think it was called 3D, even though it wasn't in 3D. Is that
the one at the water park?
No, this is the one where they go to the Bahamas. And yet
that's part 4.
Shark knows that.
Yeah.
And how it knows that.
It tracks Chief Brody's wife and kids down.
Yeah. How does it do that?
This is smart.
Like the first story I liked, right? It's just a great white shark. And then it morphs somehow into.
Trigger warning, folks. Old man rant coming.
Some kind of paranormal shark that can sense things. And it's just, they keep ruining movies by making sequels.
He's mad because before we turned it all stuff on, I told him that Disney is doing a prequel. They just wrapped up filming, allegedly, of a prequel of Predator, and it's going to be called Skull. And he's like, why can't they just leave it alone?
You've already ruined it. They're going to ruin it. I don't even need to see it. They're going to ruin it. They're going to ruin a masterpiece. Exactly. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And shout out to Joe Weeks for sending me the video of the musical of Predator. I would definitely go watch that. But yeah, they're going to look. I love the second one. As corny as the second one.
Second one's good.
But yeah, because I really like Danny Glover. But
I would say the same thing about the Alien franchise. Alien and Aliens Part 2 are great movies, but then it just kind of it loses me.
They do. Less is more.
Agreed.
Less is more.
Agreed. And I just saw where they're going to be releasing Dune on HBO pretty soon, so I am excited about that.
I'm super pumped because it doesn't really follow Herbert's books the way I don't believe. So it's going to be really different, and I'm really excited, yeah.
I wonder who's going to be playing Sting's character in the new one.
Man, I don't know. Nobody can mess with Sting, though. Harkonnen. There are Harkonnen among you.
Yeah. What do you got planned for the rest of the week?
My family's going out of town, so it'll just be me, baby. I'll just be pretty much barely getting by, just sipping on water and eating breadcrumbs. They're going up to Oklahoma to visit some family.
I thought they were going on some cruise or something.
No, not yet. We're getting everything done, but so we're trying to get stuff squared away before my daughter moves to College Station.
I got you. Have you been watching any of the Summer Olympics?
Not 1 minute.
Oh, I watched the USA women's softball versus Japan. That was pretty good.
I haven't watched. The only thing that I have watched has been disc golf.
Yeah.
That has been legitly it as far as any kind of sport or anything like that.
I got you.
That's it. I've really been very, very boring. So,
as usual. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Nothing's outside of the ordinary there.
All right. Well, before we wrap this thing, this show up, don't forget, folks, if you have any stories you want to share with me and Cam, you can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show. What's the number, Cam? Do you remember off the top of your head? That's 888-393-2783. That's right. 888-393-2783. And
I'm going to wood burn it into the top of this desk.
That's a good idea, right?
So I can always remember it.
Don't forget to rate the show, write us a review, click that subscribe button, and go on over and subscribe to Expanded Perspectives on YouTube. I know we've asked before, but it doesn't seem like a lot of you are going over there and doing it. Come on, guys. If you want to help us out, it doesn't cost you anything.
It's free.
To go over there and just click on that. We're trying to grow those numbers. I hope everybody has a good week. Till next time, be safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.